Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Was there ever anything between you and Trip?
If you're referring to a romantic relationship, no.
The reason I ask is, well, you're all I think about, if you know what I mean. And I'm not talking about an adolescent crush. That was 2 days ago. This is much more serious the way I feel about you. Anyway, what's driving me crazy is I don't know if these feelings are mine or his.
I can't answer that.
I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable.
I'm not uncomfortable.
I just thought I should tell you this. When I still had the chance.
We'll start today's podcast with...
A message from our sponsors.
No, we do not currently have any sponsors.
Mm. We should get some.
Well, we have not yet sold out.
Why don't you get some?
Yes.
We haven't sold out.
You're in charge of, you're in charge of finding ways to let us sell out. Because we'd be quite eager to do so, given the opportunity. No, I was going to suggest that we start the podcast with a definition of the term similitude, which is defined by... Yes, similitude. That's how it's pronounced, isn't it? I'm presuming that's how it's pronounced. Similitude.
That's my understanding.
I think so.
And Oxford, via Google, defines similitude as the quality or state of being similar to something. It works in this case because this episode is very similar to Voyager's Tuvix.
It's similitudular.
It's similitudular. The archaic meaning is...
It's similar to Tuvix, but...
It's not the same. We'll go over that. We'll go over how it's definitely very much not the same. But it's similar. It fills a similar...
It's similitudular.
Yes. It's a similar situation.
It fills a similar... dramatic Star Trek niche as Tuvix does.
Tuvix is better.
Okay, before we get started, though, there's one quick programming note. If you can't tell already, we are fully remote this week. We're all three in different locations, whereas normally we would all three be in the studio.
It's because we're just feeling neat. That's why we're feeling neat.
No, it's actually because like a bunch of my family got COVID. They got the vid. Yeah. They got the vid.
The vid.
I don't have any symptoms, but I don't want to pass it on. Yeah, I don't want to fill Jesse or Dan with any griblies. So we're doing this remote. The cool thing, though, is...
The house is full of griblies.
The cool thing, though, is that we need practice doing this and doing it well because we are quite eager.
For the apocalypse?
We're eager. Well, we'd be excited to have like guests and stuff on. It'd be cool if it would be more easy to do that type of stuff. And so this is good practice for us to see if we can work this out in a non-crazy way. So programming note concluded. Please forgive us, any digital... goobles or garbles. Hopefully it will not negatively impact your enjoyment of this.
Do not forgive audio the digital gleebles. Don't forgive that shit.
Yeah. This week, first, we got we're already falling behind here. First, we have to welcome the audience, so I'll do that bit.
Welcome
to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This is episode 144. Is that a gross... Is 144 a gross of episodes?
I believe it is. Yeah.
I think this is a gross of episodes. Episode 144. And
12.
Not counting bonus episodes and all that jazz. We will be discussing Star Trek Enterprise.
144 is 12 times 12.
Yes, which is a gross, if I recall correctly.
I said that.
Yes.
Oh, shit. My bad. I missed that. I wasn't listening.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't listening to any of
I shouldn't have been so I should have said that.
No, I mean, but I wasn't listening. I should be listening. So
okay, I haven't even gotten to the episode title. I mean, they know the title because it's like when it pops up in the podcatcher or whatever they're using.
You're trying to get to something.
They know what the episode is, but we are trying to make a point.
You're trying to get to something.
Well, because we already defined similitude. They know we're doing similitude. Okay, so
You're just trying to get to this point. You're having trouble
because Star Trek Enterprise season 3. Episode 10,
that must suck,
I believe, similitude, a controversial classic, all sorts of other C words apply to this episode. So a brief outline of the topics we plan to cover.
Is it true it was directed by LeVar Burton?
It was directed by LeVar Burton, and it was written by Manny Coto, who I think it was the fourth season that became the showrunner, but he did a lot of writing on the series, particularly in the third season. He also worked on 24, I believe, among other things. So Manny Coto, he did all sorts of stuff. But yes,
24 is the show with the beeping.
Yes, beep. Yes,
beep.
It's all like about the clock. Yeah, away, beeping.
It's actually a sequel different to the other show with the beeping, which was ER.
A little different. Yeah. 24 was like mid aughts, I think, and then the other, then it's ER was like
with early, like Kiefer.
Nineties.
Alongside Enterprise. It was in the era where Americans just loved sort of breaking the law and murdering people.
The dark days.
The whole fear of terrorism business and all that. Okay, so I think we've in approximately 6 or 7 minutes have finally gotten to the key point.
I'm so sorry for you, Patrick. It took you so long to make that point.
The brief outline of what we're going to talk about tonight are, of course, we will give our brief overall impressions of the episode.
I never have that problem.
We will.
I never get mad about it.
We'll discuss Enterprise era sexualization, which is rears its head here a few times. It's not that often, but enough that you notice. We'll debate briefly about whether or not Captain Archer was correct in making the various decisions he made. He made a number of decisions. And we'll also be talking about comparisons to Voyager's Tuvix, and as Dan noted earlier. There are a lot of differences. There are a lot of differences. Superficially, they're similar.
I think Jesse noted that, but I also noted it quietly. The similarities,
you guys fill the same box for me. You're just interchangeable cogs in the podcasting machine.
I think the true similarities don't begin until about 34 minutes into Tuvix, because that's when you start getting to that moral shit.
So we'll talk about that, and then, of course, odds and ends. All right, Jesse.
Odds and ends.
What were you going to say?
What was I going to say?
I don't know. How about this? What was your overall impression of this particular television program broadcast? What was it? November 19th, 2003.
It was almost 20 years ago.
Yes, it was. It was almost 20 years ago. 19 years ago.
I think I like Tuvix better.
I think. Remember that episode where they played lacrosse on the desert and they weren't wearing shirts?
Yes, it was called Desert Crossing.
Yeah, I think this episode I was more entertained. That episode was probably better. Actually, I couldn't say that, but the episode,
people would disagree.
Okay,
I might disagree with some of those people.
I enjoyed this episode more than that episode, but at the same time, I mean, yeah, I don't know, it's fine. It was good. It was all right.
It feels like an, I don't know, for lack of a better term, important episode. That's not really what I mean, but in terms of Enterprise, it's like one of the ones you ought to watch. If you're not going to watch all of them, it's kind of one of the ones you should watch. It stands out amongst many of the others. I don't know. It's got some interesting questions in there, but I think the storyline also, or like the choices that the writers made, frequently undermines the story I think they're trying to tell.
Like the whole Archer basically telling, was it Sim Trip? You know, the whole moment where he's like, "I'm gonna fucking murder you. So don't make me murder you." Like, I would like to go more in that area, but they didn't really.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
they kind of touched over a lot of the important parts of that episode.
We'll go into more details that in a bit.
But it was cool that they sort of it showed the evolution of him, I guess, just being like, he's starting to ask who he is and stuff like that. So
yeah, no, there's a lot to like about this episode. It's I don't know. I always feel reluctant to watch this episode. I've seen it a bunch of times, but I like even for this podcast, I was like, oh man, I gotta watch it, and it's gonna make me, because parts of it just make me feel all shitty, and then you know it's a sad story in a lot of ways, but and then other parts of it I just get a little confused by. Overall, I think it's worth watching. I think people's entertainment and enjoyment value will vary fairly significantly, perhaps even over the course of multiple viewings.
Which did you enjoy more, this episode or Desert Crossing?
I would have enjoyed Desert Crossing more.
Interesting. I actually enjoyed this one more, but it seems like you're more into this that one.
Desert Crossing has Captain Archer eating some testicles. And it also has Captain Archer and Trip all shirtless and oiled up, weirdly like oiled and sweaty and wrestling with each other.
It was a better episode. There was more like sun.
Too much sun, in fact. Well, see, that's why Desert Crossing seemed like an episode where they put more effort into it.
It's got Clancy Brown in it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it seems like it has more, it's a little more epic. They put more effort into it. But I find myself bored at parts of Desert Crossing.
Yeah, I think Desert Crossing's not really a great episode, and I think
it's kind of slow.
But there are great scenes like the Desert Lacrosse, which is arguably one of the better scenes in Enterprise.
This comes up a lot in Enterprise, which I'm a big fan of the show Enterprise. But Enterprise is similar in some ways, I think, to Star Trek V, although I'm sure some people might push back on that, in that there's bits and pieces. Star Trek V is worth watching because there's some amazing stuff in Star Trek V. It's just there's other stuff that's less amazing. Enterprise doesn't get as bad as the bad parts of Star Trek V, but there's like long stretches of mediocrity, for lack of a better term, where when you're watching the episode, you're like, okay, cool, I'm watching a fun Star Trek episode. That's cool. That's fun. But that it's lacking a little bit of the magic. And in a lot of cases, it's just the actors doing such a good job with pretty limited material that might elevate something a little bit.
I thought Jolene Blaylock did an excellent job of being a concerned Vulcan. Like, cause she looked concerned, but she still also was like looking like a Vulcan at the same time. And I was like, for whatever reason, I was really impressed by that. Like, that you could tell she was all worried, but at the same time, still all like not showing it. So she managed to show somehow.
Very calm.
I liked her performance.
I always like Jolene Blaylock. I think T'Pol is a fantastic character, and she does a great job with that character. It's a worthwhile episode, but I'm not going to vouch for how great people will think it is. And we'll get into some of those details in just a few minutes. How about we start with, just to get it out of the way.
Are you talking about her very sensible Vulcan neuro pressure jammies?
Well, okay. Yes. That's a subcategory of the overall thing with, the sexualization of Jolene Blaylock and others, on Enterprise. And you know, we're not prudes here. I'm not going to speak for the other two gentlemen, but sex is sexy, right? That's fine.
I mean, it
depends how it's presented. If it seems like it's exploitative or not, Enterprise sometimes falls on the more exploitative side of the fence.
That's what I'm saying.
It's usually pretty over the top.
So first of all, that she's wearing any kind of jammies while doing this. I know it's like supposed, I don't know, whatever. But they were like cut off for some reason. They were cut off, and the scene begins with a behind the shot view of her sort of like laying down with this cut off shirt, if I guess that's what you call it, and her midriffs are showing, and she's all, you know, and it's
Klingons don't normally dress like that.
Vulcans.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's not very sensible. They were doing it while they're working on the neural nodes on each other's feet, which was interesting.
Sounds like some acupressure nonsense.
I've heard of that. I'm like, that's a real thing. Well, real as in people do it.
I'm sure it feels nice.
Where they
it's not going to cure your cancer.
Where they have things where they press on your foot, and they're like, this actually connects to this part of your brain, this foot thing. So I'll press on your foot and it'll trigger this part of your brain to cure whatever sickness you have.
As long as you don't think it's going to cure cancer, like it's awesome. Enjoy the foot massage. I'm in favor of that. Highly in favor of that.
I've seen ones where they have a pen, like an electro pen, and they put the electro pen on your foot, and it goes like. I swear to God,
I believe you, and whatever floats your boat.
And it shows up on the software. He's like, oh, I got a good one here. Like,
I got a good one here. That's disturbing.
Yeah.
I got a good knife. Yeah.
So, but they made Trip shirtless, which.
Well, okay. So that gets to. We've made this point before. I think we made it even when we were discussing Broken Bow eons ago, very early on in the podcast, or Broken Bow, whatever your preferred pronunciation is.
I say Broken Bow.
And that's what they say in the episode, I believe. But anyway.
You were just covering your tracks.
I think that what we said then is true here, which is Enterprise often feels regressive. In a few areas, and one of those areas is in the sort of sexual exploitation of women, particularly. And I gotta some of that was just like a thing around the 2000s. If you were alive at that time, I think the country was sort of moving, the US was moving in that direction in a weird way. A lot of shows were doing that type of stuff. You know, I can expect the studio or Rick Berman or whatever was pressuring the Star Trek producers to be like, you got to make it more sexy. We got to get more 14-year-old boys watching this Star Trek. Got to get them young so that we can have them as customers for years and years and years. So show some tits and show some ass and have them wear ridiculous clothes like they did in the 60s. So I think we see a lot of that. I think what getting to your point about Trip, Dan, is
I'm Rick Berman. This is how I talk.
I think Rick Berman's whole plan was he's like, all right, well, we want to show more boobs, but this is the year, this is the turn of the century. We're in a new century and there's equality now. So let's also show some like dick and balls and some sexy oiled up men. They got the wrong message. They were like, let's also sexually exploit men. then it's okay.
And that's kind of the argument a lot of people use on the internet for like, when you have a video game, it happens a lot in video games, when you have this character that's, you know, got very sort of amplified parts, this female character, right? And it's very sexualized. And they're like, well, what? The men are like, they don't have their men are all buff. The men are all buff. So it's, you know, they make the women look sexy, but they make the men look sexy too. So it's the same. It's like, well, no, it's not, because it's a power fantasy with the male man, basically. Yeah.
This has come up with a lot of.
And so I was saying that Rick.
Bound was another one.
So this idea that Trip is not wearing a shirt, it's like kind of like similar logic used for you know, some of the video game conversations surrounding the ridiculous standards that women, female characters have. So just saying, like, Rick Berman's attitude is right in line with that.
So. Yeah, it is. And again, it's very tricky because, like, I don't personally have a problem with the representation of sexuality. I think that's great. But I think there's different ways to do it. And I'm not suggesting they got it right in the 80s or 90s either all the time. But I think a lot of times they did. I think, you know, there were a lot of situations where it was like a sexy Star Trek scene with, you know, Dax or Deanna or whatever, but not quite in the same way. Deanna evolved a little bit out of that. Deep Space Nine and Voyager, I think, did a better job with it. And then Enterprise sort of started sliding backwards with episode, like we discussed Bound a while back, 100 episodes ago or something.
Yeah.
And
which one was Bound?
That was the one with the Orion slave women.
Oh yeah, right.
And the pheromones and all that other stuff.
Yeah, right. Bummer.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, Lower Decks, Tendi talks about, you know, adds to that Orion lore a little bit. But again, Lower Decks is a good example, I think, largely. They've done a good job of showing human sexuality without it being exploitative.
Exploitative.
Now,
exploitative.
But what about this in this specific episode, right? So, Dan, you've already talked about the old jammy jams, and then
with the cut off showing her midriffs,
and you know, this
and
is
putting his, you know, kind of like laying his head between her legs, and at the end of the scene, she's like, breathe, implying that he's tense and holding his breath because he's all turned on by T'Pol.
Because she's sitting on his face.
Yeah, right.
And our friends. I was going to say, our friends over at Open Pike Night referred to that as a 66 and a half because she was like, she was just sort of like sitting on his face a little bit, but not, you know, just sort of leaning over him.
I mean, I guess you could say it's relevant that he's all tensing up when he's around her because it's supposed to show that like he's attracted to her and stuff. But it also feels like, I don't know.
It's the way it's directed.
The taste is, like you said, with the 60s, was it 66 and a half?
66 and a half.
That's pretty funny.
It is good. No, but like LeVar Burton directed this. I think he directed it in a more tasteful way.
Directed it.
Than you might see. Have seen other people direct this, right? I think a more traditional director would have been even more male gazy, but this is still male gazy, right? And like LeVar Burton presumably is not similar to his character Jordy LaForge. Right. Maybe he was channeling Jordy LaForge when filming these things, but it is somewhat more elegant than it wasn't lascivious, but it was still a very overtly, like, this is just, we're sexualizing this because we want to get your attention.
So back to what I was saying a second ago in terms of sexualization of men and women. So they sexualize
sexualization.
They sexualize Joe T'Pol's character, but then when TT3 has his shirt off in
Charles Trip Tucker the Third?
Right, TT3. Because it's the third. Yeah. When he has his shirt off, once again, you could say that it's like, oh, well, they're showing, you know, sexy Trip and they're showing sexy T'Pol. But do you agree that in terms of the male gaze, it's more of like it's a fantasy where you're supposed to imagine yourself as Trip, basically? It's not that we're admiring Trip's like half naked body. We're supposed to be pretend that we're in his position. Like,
I agree.
From the man's perspective, it was done to be like, look, your Trip.
And yes, I agree with that. I agree with that observation 100%. And again, while I think it was done somewhat more tastefully than you might have otherwise gotten with another director, it's still very male gazy. It's still very, and we got to think, what's the purpose of this scene, right? Okay, there's a couple purposes. And one of them is just to sort of set things up that Trip is, he's obsessed with making this tweak to the engines that will make for a smoother warp 5 cruising flight. All right.
Wait, so okay, so
that's
yeah,
the,
we
that's the inform that's one piece of information they want to get across to us. And the other thing is to remind the audience, especially people who are just jumping in now, that Trip and T'Pol have a somewhat flirty relation. There's some chemistry between them.
But at the same time, T'Pol's all like, there's nothing romantic between us whatsoever, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and that's fine. But the way the scene was presented, there's a lot of innuendo, obviously.
Exactly. And we can think of alternatives, right? If the alternative is to have that same information passed, they could have had it at a cocktail party. They could have had it in the cafeteria. They could have had a number of different places.
Exactly. That's a good point.
Even an intimate conversation, they could be watching a movie together or something. They didn't have to be, you know, naked and rubbing up in each other, right? So it's like, and then you have to ask yourself, you're like, what exactly are they playing this for comedy, or are they playing it for titillation, or a little bit of both, or are they sincerely think this is the best way to get across that there's sexual tension between these two officers?
I don't know. You can always go to the whole, like, in the future, things are different and people look at things different, but it's hard to imagine that scene is anything but supposed to, you know, be suggestive in some way. Therefore being like, there's no part of me watching it that can believe like, oh, this is a strictly professional sort of neuro pressure foot node dance or whatever they were doing.
Footnodes. Well, and the other thing I think that's important for this particular episode is the age difference between T'Pol and Sim, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't pay much attention to it. But this,
well, I mean, Neelix does it with Kes.
Well, I was going to say, this is evocative of the whole Neelix and Kes thing, which was also weird. And people thought it was weird at the time because Kes was 2 years old. And in this case, T'Pol she doesn't hold Trip or Sim when he's a baby, but she's seen him from embryo stage onward. And then at the end, it's like they kiss and then.
Did they get busy? They might have gotten busy.
I was going to say, did they have sex? Because he was all like talking about like a good parting gift. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I was going to ask both of you guys if there was any evidence. Although, I don't know. I think the implication was there.
The only reason the only argument against him getting busy is that Phlox called him in, called Simtrip into the room. He's like, it's time to die, you know? And so how quickly could they have done that in that time before he'd call back and be like, hey, where are you? We need you. But
well, there's a whole episode takes place over the, like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Right. So I think I'm leaning towards they did more than kiss, you know?
Yeah.
They like each other.
They totally like each other.
Like.
Yeah.
Like each other. So. Well, I don't know. Are there any other thoughts on just sort of the sexuality in this? I think the age difference weirded me out a little bit.
And even if it wasn't only a few days old, that was supposed to be Trip when he was like seven. I think he was supposed to be 17.
Well, there was that one point where he was all hitting on her.
Yeah.
And to her credit, she didn't make out with him when he was a teen.
That's true.
She waited until he was closer to his
normal age. I think that was played by Shane Sweet, who played Seven. Speaking of Seven of Nine on Voyager, mm-hmm. played Seven on Married with Children. He was the late addition back 6 seasons in, they introduced a new character to liven the show back up, and he was some kid.
You're talking
named
about the teenage version of Sim?
I believe so. Yes, I believe that was Shane Sweet.
He was a good actor. He didn't have the right nose.
No, it was the same guy.
He didn't have the right nose, though, because he had more of a Roman nose, whereas Charles Trip Tucker III has like a ski slope nose. You know, he's got ski slope noses where it's all like slurp, flurp. You know what I'm saying?
He got a slurpy nose.
Yeah. Booger factory.
You know, like if rain goes down, it would like go down and then shoot up. It would like actually angle up into the air a little bit.
I haven't looked at his nose. Surprisingly, I have not looked at TT3's nose.
You ought to be looking at Charles Trip Tucker III's nose. He's got an elfine nose.
Did you think Adam Taylor Gordon, who played Kid Trip at 8, do you think he had more of a nose?
It's harder to tell with kids because kids got weird noses. They don't got the nose they're going to end up with, you know?
Like Maximilian Quesmodel, who was in when he was 4.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy from Batman Returns. Wasn't that guy named Maximilian?
Harvey.
No. All right. So, okay. Well,
are you talking about Batman Returns, like the Michael Keaton?
Yes. Yeah. Batman Returns, the other one.
No, I know. It's hard for me to keep track. You're right. Okay, fine.
Okay. No, I'm just teasing you.
It's right. You're right. I'm wrong.
There's a bunch of those movies.
Okay. I don't remember the character who Maximilian was
like
now.
10 or something.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Okay. How about this? Let's take a quick break. And then when we return, we can get into the meat of the comparisons between this and Voyager's Tuvix, which I think will illuminate a lot about this episode, particularly what's different about this episode.
Chewing the fat.
All right. Be right back. Okay, we're back. We're back talking talking similitude. Star Trek Enterprise.
Don't you think Depressing
episode.
Don't you think Sim is kind of a tasteless name?
Yeah. I have that in my notes. I said it's a silly name, and I don't think it was a good choice.
Silly. It's a little demeaning.
I think there's a lot of bad choices that they made here.
What do you think about the opening when there was like the fake out opening where it was showing like TT3 down there and we weren't sure what was going on? But then Malcolm Reed, he looked up for some reason. They focused on him and Malcolm Reed looked like he was about to like break down in tears. But like he barely had any role in this episode.
Yeah.
At the opening when they were looking at Dead Trip.
That's probably why they put the camera on him so much, because he wasn't in the rest of the episode. So
it was like a red herring.
This is the old classic.
Oh, no, dude, give him more
this
space.
Is a classic switcheroo episode opening. We're like, oh no, Trip is dead. What killed Trip? But within a few minutes of the show starting, as soon as Dr. Phlox starts talking about his clone worm, not only do we know the deal, so the cold open is rendered meaningless, because now we know, okay, it's the clone. Obviously, they do go ahead with the clone, and the clone dies, and that's what was at the beginning. That's the answer to that question. But not only do we know that, but I think we can reasonably fill in the bulk of the rest of the plot, which is that the clone and T'Pol will have some sort of romance thing going on, and that the clone is going to help out in some way, and that one way or the other, the clone has to sacrifice himself in order to save Trip.
We know this plot
as of 5 minutes into the story.
They made it like to be as moral dilemma-y as possible throughout the whole thing. So the desert, Lyserian larvae or whatever, it was basically a super plot plot driver. It didn't. It every single thing that happened had to do with whatever they felt like morphing this thing. We discover that humans can pass memories through genetic sequencing, which I like. Like, this is an important discovery. Yeah. It's kind of like they threw that in there. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, I know it's out of nowhere, but you know, this is. But I didn't mind that. But
It was
that was done to sort of increase the moral dilemma because it makes people become more attached to him.
Yes.
Which
I argue is one of the ways that potentially increasing the dramatic impact and reducing the philosophical impact, because it sort of undermines, and along with a lot of the other problems, which I think you're going to list some of them now, undermine that philosophical question about whether or not it's right to kill somebody, that, you know, to create and then kill somebody for the sake of saving another life, right? That's the moral question that they've now already undermined a little bit, because they're like, oh, he's just like the other guy.
Right, exactly. And there's also this utilitarian thing of, it's easier to sort of write dialogue for somebody if they, I guess, if in a dramatic way, if they sound like Chip. But yeah, I was going to say, it'd be easiest if he was like tied up in a locker and didn't have a face.
Yes.
You know, because then if he just sat there like this sort of like, you know, zombified sort of like Silston, he's just kind of like...
arms or legs.
Right, and that's exactly right what you're Patrick was saying about it undermines some of the moral dilemma, because they briefly touch on it, because I guess when they find out that Sim is gonna die from the transplant, and Sims basically says what we're all thinking, which is like, well, I only got a few days left.
Yeah,
and Archer's like, we don't think of it like that, but they don't go into that any further. That's the only moment where they actually talk about the principle of, it doesn't matter that you only have a couple days left, and it shouldn't matter that you're just like Trip, but that's everything else is sort of built on that. That was another part where he's going to die from the surgery. It makes us it just makes us briefly contemplate this sort of idea of, does it matter if he has a few years left or does he have a couple days? But then they drive it home with, then they find out he has a chance to live a normal life. And it's kind of like they're saying it's a long shot, right? It's like almost no chance it's going to work. But that still brings up the question. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's like barely any chance at all. So you're saying there's a chance, you know? There was one part where I wasn't clear on, because they were saying, the captain was, Archer was saying, he was like, by the time you can give your doodad to Phlox, and the time he figures out if the doodad worked on your schism bow, like, it'll be too late to give Trip, you know, his medicine. But I don't really know how that matters, because like, if it didn't work, yes, great, you can give Trip your stuff. But if it did work and he did get to live a long life, well, then he's certainly not going to want to fucking give up his life at that point, you know? So I don't know. Cause there was just that brief line. He's like, I wish I could find it, but
if this would have been a cleaner story, if it was just, they created a body, it grew up having its own personality, and then they had to make the choice of killing this new sentient creature or not. Now, getting into the comparison with Tuvix, right? Again, very superficially, this shares some meat of the plot with Tuvix, in the sense that in both cases, the captain is put into a position where they have to make the decision to sacrifice somebody they don't know for somebody they do know, right? So at that level, it's a similar philosophical conundrum. And it's not particularly original, but both TV shows, Voyager and Enterprise, pick slightly different sort of sci-fi mechanisms to play around with it. I think Tuvix is, for me on the whole, is a little bit more effective, because it's really straightforward. And they don't keep doing, like you're saying, Dan, piling on all these added things throughout the course of the episode to make it like harder and harder and harder.
Yeah, they just kind of show him like getting along on the, it wasn't until like 34 minutes in that like they really present the moral dilemma, but everything else was just kind of showing him integrate with the crew and like coming to terms with like this new life he has.
So they didn't choose to make Tuvix either. Tuvix like just happened by accident.
Tuvix was an accident, right? So here's some of the key differences that I've identified, right? So as Jesse noted, Tuvix was an accident. This was something that Archer chose to do when presented the option. So he took an action. From a philosophical perspective, that's a different debate entirely, right? He's using his agency to take an action, right?
He's the captain.
The other thing that was going on is Archer has this
fucking captain.
He's got this compulsion because of the Zindi threat against Earth. So they only hinted it in this episode, but for context, in this season, the Zindi are some new bad guys that are planning to blow up Earth in a 9/11 style attack. They've already zapped Florida, killed Tripp's sister. So stuff has already happened to this, but so a lot of what Archer keeps referring to is like, we've got to complete this mission, is because in his mind, Earth will be destroyed if Enterprise is not successful in their mission. And he's determined for some reason that he needs his old Trip back, the Trip who's in a coma and who, even if he's cured, who knows, maybe will be a little goofy in the head. Another thing that undermines this plot is this new Trip they have, Sim. He seems to have all of Trip's engineering capabilities, right, and knowledge. And yeah, so that's not a problem, right? I know it's not the same fella, but I don't think they adequately explore that what Archer's really saying is he wants his friend back, and you, Sim, right, you are not his friend. It's a different argument, but they're not having it, right? Well, and that's the other thing is you could argue, well, yeah, he right, is, but they didn't play into that argument very much. It's just right, these little taps on these very interesting discussions that just then don't happen.
Everybody kept being like, you're not Trip Tucker.
Yeah. But I was just going to say, Archer, the other thing is not just the Zindi threat, but then they add on the particulates collecting, and now the ship is going to break and the life support. Yeah. So they're, again, that's just piling on more and more reasons to force Archer to conclude that he has to kill Sim, right?
Yeah. It was interesting that Archer didn't want Sim to take that shuttle out. He was like, you don't have flight experience. He's like, I got all the memories of him, but he's like, yeah, I don't know. But
Archer's just so mad that he broke his little model spaceship.
Oh yeah.
He pretended not to be mad. He's like, oh, they break all the time, but he was secretly pissed off. From that point forward in the episode, Archer hated Sim.
Yeah, because why would he need specifically Trip? Even like without Trip, even if there was no Sim Trip, they could probably get someone else involved. I mean, I know Trip is great and everything, but they didn't really give a strong argument as to why they need Trip, but it doesn't even matter because, like you said, they already had Sim Trip that can do that stuff. And like you said, they just kind of touched on it. The other thing is Archer was going to murder Sim Trip. He made that very clear. He's like, I'm going to murder you. Yeah. You know?
He made it very clear in typical Archer fashion.
Right. And so how would
American fashion?
How would I don't know, you know, it can always be what ifs, but how can you surmise that Starfleet would feel about Archer murdering Sim Trip because Sim Trip is not his friend Trip?
None of this was very Starfleet at all.
Yeah. So
because they haven't figured this out yet. Enterprise.
It's, right, right. It's pre.
Enterprise does always get that excuse that they're figuring this stuff out along the way. So just making a decision that is sort of un-Starfleet, un-Federation is okay.
As long as there's a lesson learned from it. Right. I know, but I can't help but wonder, like, if that would be an argument for why Archer would once again be like, he doesn't really need Trip. He just doesn't want his friend to die. Because if he goes back to Starfleet and says, yeah, I killed him because he wasn't my friend Trip, they'd be like, well, man, that's kind
of
fucked up.
And the rest of the engineering staff is just fucking chopped liver. Like, they can't. It's the fucking Enterprise.
Well, and if he went back,
they're just no good. Like, come on.
If he went back to Starfleet instead of saying, I killed Sim Trip because I want to save my buddy Trip, they wouldn't go for that. But if he said, I want to kill some Trip because
I want to kill him because he fucking broke my model and he looked at my dog funny.
Because
he said he wanted to be the captain. I didn't know Trip always wanted to be the captain. Now Archer's going to be all suspicious around him because Sim was all like, I wanted to be a captain, but my dad made me be an engineer.
But if he went to Starfleet and said, I killed Sim Trip because we need Trip, I think Starfleet would be a little bit more, you know, amiable to the idea of like, say like, okay, well, you're allowed to murder him in this instance because you were saving the Enterprise, as opposed to like, you're allowed to murder him because your good friend was going to die, you know? So yeah. I guess I know that you're saying is it doesn't really matter. And that's one of those in Starfleet, they wouldn't do this,
but
I think that's evidence as to why they should have touched on it.
Yes.
More. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying is that I, on the one hand, I will always give Enterprise. They always have that excuse that get out of jail free card, because that's kind of the point of Enterprise, is that they're not going to make the same decisions that we would see, say, Kirk, Picard, Janeway, Burnham, etc. make, because this is all, they're all figuring this out on the go. However, that doesn't relieve the writers of the responsibility of actually sort of exploring and interrogating that idea, as opposed to not mentioning it at all. Like, they really wrote this as if there's no, almost as if they're trying to say, they're pretending there's a moral dilemma, but they're also portraying it as Archer is 100% correct, which they did not do in Tuvix, right? Jane, there's a debate to this day in Tuvix, because the way that episode was written, there are perfectly rational reasons to be on either side of that debate. You can make a really good detailed argument and go back and forth for years about the decisions that Janeway made in that episode. In this episode, it was, let's give Archer every fucking reason to kill this guy, right? We're going to just pile it on top, the Zindi weapon, the ship's about to collapse, Trip is his good friend, blah, 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 blah. Give him every reason to do it, and then he'll do it. And then at the end, we're not like, oh yeah, no, Sim should have totally tried to get the enzyme. And like, I don't know how many people, you just don't hear this being debated as much.
Yeah, because at the end, Sim Trip is just basically like, I was going to do it, but I decided not to do it.
By the way, I have no doubt he would be pissed off if you kept calling him Sim Trip.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if you're intentionally trolling him or not. I just wanted to clarify.
I'm trolling dead Sim Trip.
You're trolling a dead fictional character.
This is in opposition to how Tuvix reacted, which was really uncomfortable. Yes. Sim Trip, the biggest beef Sim Trip had was with Archer, and he was like, Captain, I want to do this, you know. And then Archer's like, I'm going to make you do it.
I want to try the enzyme. Let me try the enzyme.
It's my life, Captain. It's now or never.
I don't want his life.
And so,
I do. I want his life.
But so that, so he was only between him and Archer was the sort of argument was privately with him and Archer. And then he came around anyways. Whereas Tuvix tried to bring everybody in on the thing.
He was like, going around.
He had a breakdown and he was just like telling everyone to come in. And at the end, he's like, I forgive you, Janeway, which was basically like, fuck you, Janeway. Yeah. You know, you have the whole, I forgive you, but I don't.
Like, bless your heart.
Yes. So in the end, So in the end, Archer didn't have to murder Sim Trip. Janeway did murder Tuvix, but then you got to wonder who has more right to live, you know, in this situation, because Tuvix was saying, they're still inside of me. So in that way, it's
Neelix,
like,
and the orchid and Tuvok. Everyone always forgets the orchid in Tuvix.
So you could argue that because they had Neelix and Tuvok inside of Tuvix
and the orchid.
And the orchid, you separate them. Yes, I understand.
I just don't want any orchid erasure here.
So I understand there's the whole argument of like what makes a life and what doesn't. But in the difference is very straightforward with Sim Trip, they straight up killed the guy, you know, as opposed to Tuvix, there's all sorts of, you know, moral dilemma you can talk about. But there's really no moral dilemma to talk about with Sim Trip. They killed that guy, which would have been harder, I think, to reconcile. It would have been harder to reconcile Archer killing him against his will than Janeway killing Tuvix, because that would just be fucking, you know, killing some guy. Whereas Janeway, yes, she killed some guy, and in a way she did worse than Archer did. But if Sim Trip went against his will, if they went against his will, that would have been worse than Janeway did.
Well, and the other thing, the other factor here is that with Janeway's decision, one point in her favor is that she is essentially, her goal is to rescue the lives of two crew members and one orchid, which did not ask, they did not choose to be in the situation they were in. What makes it a morally complex situation on Tuvix is because the character of Tuvix is his own character, his own personality, right? There's none of this bullshit, right?
Right.
So that actually makes it more difficult, because you're not killing a clone and getting the same thing back, or basically the same thing, save for a few weeks of memories. In Tuvix, you're choosing to kill somebody who has their own sentient personality, and that's more interesting. However, You know, I think it's important to discuss that there are, I think, various reasons why this episode may not be as robustly discussed in the Star Trek fandom. First of all, Enterprise is just, it's always been less popular than Voyager. That's just as simple as that. There's a bit of a resurgence lately, but fewer people have seen Enterprise as compared to Voyager. So that could be one thing going on there. It could also just be the different storytelling, right? Like we've already discussed, there are some things that are just not quite as interesting or coherent to this episode's moral dilemma as compared to Tuvix. So there just might not be enough to grab onto because of the way they structured the story.
To pile on to the list of why it wasn't so bad to get
you're gonna Gomer pile on
to TT3 is because he did only have a couple days left. And even though Archer's like, we don't think of it like that, the audience can think of it like that.
Yeah,
fine,
he had a couple days left to live. He had an enzyme treatment that may or may not have worked. The Zindi weapon is being built nearby and they got to find it because otherwise Earth will get blown up. Their ship is getting covered in magnetic balls of some sort for some reason.
I found the line that I was trying to find earlier.
What's the line?
It was when... speaking of the enzyme, Archer goes, Phlox says there's almost no chance that the enzyme will work. And Sim is like, my life is at stake. Any chance worth taking? And then Archer goes, but at what cost? It'll take a day to synthesize the enzyme. By that time, your neural tissue won't be compatible with trips anymore. He'll die.
Oops. So that's handy. Like, that's handy for the story.
But like, I mean, even if he did save his life, though, it's still going to cost Trip his life.
Yes. He's still choosing.
So the only thing that we can hope out of that is that he'll send in his enzyme and it'll come back negative. It didn't work. He's like, okay, I guess I'm going to die now. I mean, I don't know. It was just a weird thing to introduce, but they were just kind of like, nah, we're going to, because it's like they had to tie the ribbon on that moral dilemma of, well, there's a chance that we might be able to save him. Yeah. It's kind of, and that was like put a ribbon on to close up that thread that basically says like, well, what about this third moral dilemma of like, well, he has a chance to live. Does that matter? Even though there's almost no chance.
Well, the other thing I wanted to mention, though, because and I'm not saying that this is the case, or at least certainly not for everybody, but I think the other factor that is important to at least note as a possibility is just good old-fashioned misogyny, right? Janeway and Burnham and some other female characters often receive critiques for doing very similar things that other male captains have done and that don't even get discussed, let alone discussed in a fashion that is like, oh yeah, they were right. Now, I'm just to be very clear, I'm not suggesting if you think that Janeway made the wrong decision with Tuvix, that does not make you a misogynist. However, some of the violence of the arguments has that tinge. It's hard not to think of that when you see it on Facebook or Twitter or something. You know what I'm saying?
I agree with you, but it's still hard to argue with the fact that Janeway killed Tuvix against his will, and then Sim Trip was like, you can kill me. That's a big difference. Yeah. So Captain Archer, we never had to explore that dilemma. And I was going to say, if Sim Trip went against his will, and they, if they made him go against his will,
they like chased him down, and Captain Archer used his water polo ball to knock him out from the back,
knock him in the head,
and he wakes up and he's just strapped down and they're digging out chunks of his brain and he's like, Captain.
If Archer killed Sim Trip the way that Janeway killed Tuvix, then yes, Archer would have been the worst one in that situation, I think. But the way they set it up, it was easy because it's like, oh, he's gonna die in a few days, and he's giving him turning himself in, so it's no big deal. Whereas Tuvix is like crying and making this big scene, and it was really upsetting, that went on too long, but like in a good way. It was that kind of like, it's one of those scenes that to be effective, it has to go on a little too long.
Yes,
take your head.
Yeah.
But as far as Tuvix. Tuvix goes to Kes for help of all the people. So Tuvix has someone that who's going to stand in his corner, and he picks Kes of all people, mm-hmm. which seems like a bit of an odd choice because Kes loves Neelix, but I don't know. I guess they figured, well, if Kes goes for it, then it should be okay. I thought it was an odd choice for Tuvix to go.
Well, he's part Neelix. Over. Neelix likes Kes. You know, I can buy it.
Yeah, but he should also know that she's like, prefers. She's like all right with Tuvix, but she prefers.
That's where the orchid part comes in.
Yeah,
threw off his reasoning.
Yeah.
Well, nobody
has an orchid stem through his brain stem.
Nobody was in TT3's corner. The only one, except T'Pol, maybe she briefly said, like, this is weird and morally questionable. And
but
like,
the way it plays out, it seems more like T'Pol was like, you know what? This is a logical opportunity to take Trip for a joyride without without having to actually commit to the real trip, right? By kissing and or possibly having sex with Sim.
She realized that probably by the end. I don't know. You think she realized that from the beginning?
See, I don't know. It's
a possibility.
We rely on what we're given on the screen, and there's these loose ends and these little dead ends and stuff that it would have been interesting to explore a little bit more, sort of tighten things up and made it a more streamlined story, I think. So with T'Pol, I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's also hard not to come to that conclusion that she was like, this is a good idea. I'm going to make out with this guy who looks like this other guy.
See if it's any good.
Except this guy is like 2 weeks old and he's like a baby. I'm going to make out with him, possibly have sex with him just to get the vibe. And then like when the other guy is cured, because the guy I had sex with, they scoop out bits of his brain and stick it in the other guy. And then I can have sex with that guy. Right. Like, I don't know. It just it comes off as
weird.
A little bit.
That's starting to get weird.
It's weird. If you dig down too deep, and you shouldn't always dig down too deep in Star Trek stories, but this is convoluted, right? This is not like one of those stories where it's like so simple that it needed more. I think it was the opposite. They had all these great opportunities, and they always went in like a little bit of a weird direction. How about this? Let's take another quick break, and then we get back. We can discuss Archer's decision making in a little bit more detail. Okay, we will be right back. Okay, Captain Archer's decisions. Okay, so like his first decision, the first decision that Captain Archer makes is to go ahead with Dr. Phlox's crazy ass plan, right? He knows going into it that the clone, like he believes, he's told the clone is going to feel no pain and would be able to live out his life cycle, but he knows it's going to be a super short life cycle.
Yeah, we don't know how long these Lycerian larvae live without the situation. So I guess longer.
And he doesn't know that at this stage that it's going to have Tripp's memories or anything like that, right? So that's how he's making that decision. And I'm in his shoes. I'm thinking, sure, why not? I'll give that weird cloning worm larva creature a shot. Why not? Why don't we hang out, help out my friend? However, it's still a moral choice there, because they're like Phlox is telling him straight up. He's like, oh yeah, this is going to be like, it's going to be like a Trip. You're going to see Trip grow up from a little baby to an adult, and then he'll die as an old man. Mm. That's what you're going to see. Archer makes that decision. Okay, cool. Any problems with that decision that Archer makes, or any qualms about that?
I was just noting how he got he was kind of O'Brien-y in this episode a little bit.
Archer?
Kind of grumpy. The reason I bring it to this is because when Phlox told him about this, he's basically just like, he got all grumpy. He's like, why are you telling me this, doctor? That's fucked up. And Phlox is like, I'm just telling you what needs to be done. I'm giving you the options. And then when T'Pol later is like, moral dilemma. This is a moral dilemma.
He's like, Phlox, will this be a moral dilemma? And Phlox is like, not necessarily.
And then so T'Pol says it is. So she goes, and then he's just like, I know it's a moral dilemma. Grr! Archer and O'Brien have a lot of sort of like grumpiness. They share grumpiness. Yeah.
A bit of a temper. Both of them have a bit of a temper.
Yeah. So I don't think the decision was necessary. I don't really have a problem with the decision. I think he didn't react to being presented with the idea very well. He could have been a little bit more like, thanks for the option, Phlox, instead of being like, Phlox, that's crazy. You know what you're suggesting? He's like, absolutely. But I'm to tell you.
Indubitably.
And he's like, oh, no, I don't like T'Pol. That was a different episode. So no, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that decision. Does anybody else not have a problem with that decision? I mean, it's like, I don't know. Like, it's a weird...
Does anybody else not have a problem with that decision?
I'm not convinced that Archer wanted to save Trip for any reason other than because he's my buddy.
The part of the reason why I ask it is I think if this same scenario is presented to Captain Picard, I think if Crusher says, oh yeah, I've got this weird clone worm, and we can totally clone Riker, and scoop out bits of his brain and put it into Riker and fix him up, you know, like in that Shades of Grey episode or something. I think Picard would have been like, no, are you crazy? Yeah. Why would we do that? That's horrible. We can't do that. Now, again, that's 24th century versus 22nd century,
and,
right?
And like you were saying, Enterprise, they're still figuring this stuff out. So but it was definitely a questionable decision.
It's also, this was not like, it was made a, this is not the moment, was, this philosophical dilemma, or at least the flavor of this philosophical dilemma was not invented in 2250, whatever. It was invented 3,000 years BCE, right? You know, this is.
Do you know it was 3,000 years or you just.
I don't know. A long time ago.
But that's why I brought up Archer's emotional state, because like he was using his emotions to sort of help guide his decision. They didn't really explicitly say that, but it sort of implied
he's making
all these decisions.
There should have been a scene with Archer lamenting, like talking to Paul, being like, you know, he's like, I don't want to lose my friend. I'm the captain and I don't want to lose my friend or whatever. But they couldn't have that scene because there's no way to end it with him not saying, you know what, that now that I've said it out loud, I feel like a dickhead. We'll let him survive. You know, I think that's the problem, right?
Well,
if they're sticking to the character,
is,
they can't actually have that conversation.
Well, if you're going to bring up Picard, then how would Picard react to Tuvix? Like,
you can go on www.theinternet.com and find some people's opinions on that.
If Picard,
because he was a man, and the men make the good decisions.
If Picard has such a strong sense of right and wrong, whether it is right or wrong, but he's got a very defined a framework of that stuff in his head. If it's so intense that he can refuse to genocide a killer population known as the Borg with a virus.
Of course, yes. I've checked it off. Yes, every episode you have to mention the episode I Borg obliquely. At this stage, I don't even know if you remember the name of that episode because you always refer obliquely to Picard choosing not to genocide an entire race of people.
Well, I can't show you all my cards.
Intriguingly, in this context, I thought it was quite apt.
Thanks.
Very
apt. That's good. Did you like it, Jesse?
Which one? This episode?
No, my reference to iBorg.
Oh, yeah. I always like that.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
I feel disconnected through our weird format here.
Yeah. It is weird. It's hard to get used to.
We can't tickle each other. Normally, when we're in studio, we occasionally have, during the breaks, we do little tickling each other.
I play footsies with Jesse.
Footsies. And, you know.
Dan plays footsie with Jesse, and then we wrestle around, you know, just sort of
wrestle.
Just a playful wrestling.
Wrestling around.
Some water smoke in his face.
I mean, the question of, was that a reasonable decision for Archer to make? That's why I was kind of like, I mean, I guess it doesn't, you know, it helped the plot along.
So it's
I just thought it was decided. It was, they didn't spend enough time deliberating it.
Yes.
It was decided based upon emotions and not really any kind of logic. It was just Archer freaking out the whole time.
Now, how about this? Here's the next decision that he made, which was he just let Sim wander around and like do work and stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So he let him do work, but he wouldn't let him.
Was that a reasonable thing for him to do? Yeah, exactly. He wouldn't. He selectively decided what he would let him do or not. Once he discovered he had Tripp's memories and stuff, I'm not saying it was wrong to let Sim go around, but I don't know. I just to me it was just a little easy to be like, okay, we have a medical clone whose purpose is to scoop out their brain or bits of their brain to help a patient. Let's just let them wander around, forge relationships with people. And oh yeah, by the way, apparently Sim has the same access codes and stuff as Trip because he remembers them and he has his voice and all that other stuff. So he's able to even get up to some shady shit when he tries to steal the shuttle.
Right. Well,
not the nitpick, but that's, I don't know. It's like, I think that's a beyond, that's not a nitpick. I think that's like a problem.
Yeah. I mean, once again, that goes in the direction of feeling more sort of like empathy towards this character is what it's trying to do, because ultimately they should have made him have like tied up with no face and no sounds and like put him in a box that you couldn't see. And then the question
so
is,
why didn't they just make a brain?
They could have just made a brain.
Yeah,
and also
Dan, part of a brain.
You're taking it a little bit more extreme than I was thinking. I was just thinking maybe they could just confine him to quarters or put him in the brig or something. And then he would have conversations about like, I'm your friend. Why aren't you letting me out? And then that would be part of
been
the
a
moral...
blob that you kept in a box.
I'm saying that that would have gone more in the direction of the, talking about undermining like the morality of the thing. It would have gone more in the issue of facing the morality. Is like, look, we have this faceless dude tied up in a box. Is it right to kill him? You know, then that would bring up the, and it's like, we don't get to experience the emotions, you know? So, because like we can't figure out through his face, you know, patterns, we can't figure out
he's
if it's
no
sad
face.
Or not, but do we still feel bad for this thing that has no face, you know?
Well, and I know it comes up a lot.
As opposed to a guy that can wander around the ship and have with all the codes.
It comes up a lot in Star Trek. It comes up often, this idea of the lack of security, right? So, on the one hand, I do not want to just harp on the fact that...
Oh, like in TNG when that guy from the 20th century was wandering
up on the
bridge.
Exactly. People are wandering around. What? People are coming on the bridge. Like even in an encounter at Farpoint when like Wesley he comes on the bridge, is like, I don't know, shouldn't there be like some lasers or something that prevent that? I don't know. I know he was being escorted by his mom, but like the point being that this is a trope in Star Trek, but in this particular episode, I don't think you could rely on that trope as much because it seems so ludicrous given the situation. And again, we don't have to be 22nd century brains. Just imagine this is happening today. This episode, part of the reason why it might be a worthwhile episode to watch is that the technology they're talking about is probably not too far off, right? We're pretty close to the idea of like, okay, we can clone people to harvest them. That's like that whole The Island movie was about that, right?
The Island?
Yeah. You know, the idea of rich people cloning themselves so they can have...
The Island of Dr. Moreau?
No.
Are you talking about just The Island?
The Island of Dr. Moreau is a complicated movie. It is a bad movie, but it's an interesting movie.
Yeah, the way it was put together.
The Island is less interesting, but the concept is similar, or not similar, similitude. The idea of rich people just cloning themselves.
I think you're looking for the word similar.
This is simulacrum. Something that it's a good Star Trek story in the sense that they're using a sci-fi construct to present a moral dilemma that while very futuristic and sci-fi in one sense, certainly from the 2003 perspective, it is not outside the realm of possibility in the near-term future that maybe not an accelerated growth clone or anything like that, but the idea being that you might have clones created in order to harvest for saving someone else's life, the original version, right? And there's a lot of interesting moral stuff to talk about there. I don't think they didn't quite get to it in this particular episode because they just mixed too much stuff in with the business.
Right. And you're talking about the security measures of leaving Trip with all of those passcodes and like, then we brought up the TNG episode where the dude from the 20th century who had all those stocks, he wandered up on the bridge. And in TNG, they briefly touch on it. They say like, well, in the future, we trust people not to do silly things. But then, of course, there's questions like, well, why do you have security officers and blah,
and
blah,
those people
blah,
also don't have access codes, too. So, and they don't seem particularly threatening. So the point is like, it's still stupid, but at least you don't pay as much attention to it. Here, it just seems very odd that they would choose that as a crew. I know why they did it from a writing perspective, from a dramatic perspective, because again, all the choices they made were choices that
people would call that lazy writing, though.
Well, you know, I wouldn't go that far because I don't want to insult the writers. Manny Curtis,
I didn't say that. I'm making the assertion without the backbone to like.
And
you know,
I keep telling you, you're hanging out with the wrong people, Dan. These some people you're always palling around with.
Oh, man. Who are these people?
Who are these some people? Because they at every turn they make the choice to pick the thing that's going to be provide for the most interpersonal drama within the interaction of the characters. It undermines the entire philosophical side of the argument. And as a result, I think it retroactively sort of also undermines some of the character stuff going on because these are unusual pressures, unusual situations, and the storyline basically keeps changing in the direction of what's going to make this the most gut-wrenching thing possible, except for at the very end where they chicken out and they don't do the two Vicks, you know, wandering around crying thing. They go a much lamer route with it.
I guess it is still touching in a way because he's more resigned to it, but it's not as powerful. I will say he got the short end of the stick when he, in terms of what he was meant to do in life, because he was talking about near the beginning, he was like, "Did you always want to be a starship captain?" And Archer's like, "As long as I can remember," and it's because what I was meant to do. And there's a callback at the end where Sims says, "You said to me once that commanding a starship is what you were meant to do. I guess this is what I was meant to do. Good luck, Captain." And So it's kind of like makes you feel bad because like that is it's supposed to it's like this deep. It's like I was put on this earth to be a starship captain, and it's like I was put on this earth to be harvested. That has some relevancy,
but
actually.
it also absolves Archer of all responsibility in the end. So there's no question. Whatever philosophical question there might be is eliminated by, as you noted, Dan, person at the center of the philosophical question choosing in the end to voluntarily sacrifice themselves, right? Yeah. And again, that's fine. It's an interesting story. I do enjoy this story from that perspective. It's interesting to see it all walk through. It's just when you look at it a little closer, you're just like, what? There's something not holding together quite here yet. What exactly were they trying to say with this episode? Because in the end, the way it's directed, the way the storyline and the plot is laid out, the way the characters interact, everything comes down to it could not have ended except in this fashion. And if that's the case, then there's no moral dilemma to discuss. They've just told a story, and through the decisions of framing and direction and the lines the characters are speaking and the plot contrivances, they are just telling you over and over again, yeah, Archer had no choice but to do this. And oh, by the way, in the end, Sim totally is like cool with it. Like maybe not super cool with it, but he's doing like a whole honorable sacrifice thing or whatever. And in that sense is cool with it. Basically, Sim offered to sacrifice himself because to him, he perceived the alternative to be pissing in a bottle and shitting his pants as a withered old man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so it wasn't like exactly.
Yeah. So again, you know, it's not like he could be like, oh, there's a paradise here that's a stasis field. Or yeah, why didn't they put him, I don't know if they have stasis fields at this stage in Star Trek. Maybe they don't, or maybe not in the same sense. I think they had some sort of hibernation thing because Khan had the hibernation stuff. So they had some legitimate equivalent that they could have done. That wasn't brought up. That wasn't brought up because it would undermine the plot of the story.
He could have used that for a toilet.
Yeah. All right. Any other
engineers? He's an engineer. Could have engineered a toilet on that.
Major points, or shall we move along? There's a few odds and ends to discuss.
I have a few odds and ends, but I don't know that I have any major. I don't know if they qualify as major points.
Well, my first odd and end is that key lime pie rules.
It's pretty good.
I like when they bring up key lime pie. It's a very easy pie to make at home if you can find the ingredients at your grocery market. It was invented in the Florida Keys by fishermen who needed a treat that they could take out on the boat that would not spoil.
I was watching that and they didn't even really show the pie, but I suddenly got hungry for key lime pie. I was watching it.
I was upset that they didn't really show the pie because it seemed ludicrous to me that in LA in 2003, you know, the craft services people couldn't have whipped up some sort of key lime pie on the double. It only takes like, you know, 2 hours to sit in the fridge and then it's ready to go.
Maybe this isn't anything real profound or anything, but I did like when Trip was professing his feelings towards T'Pol because he was saying it in a very matter of fact, like objective kind of way. He's like, this is how I feel. I don't know if they're my feelings. I don't know if they're Trip Tucker III's feelings, but this is how I feel. And I kind of like that idea of, you know, if you have emotions, if you have strong romantic emotions towards somebody, strong romantic emotions, it's easy to feel.
Yeah. Like, that's like from Hank Hill.
You're a real boy, Dan. Yeah. You're a real boy.
I know. I'm human.
Strong romantic emotions. Normal.
It's common for people to feel shame about those kinds of emotions towards someone. It's like, will they like me back? Oh no, if I'm being so vulnerable. But like Trip was just like, I don't know if they're mine. I don't know if they're someone else's. Very biological kind of like, it's like, I don't know. It's like, he's kind of like, I wish I didn't feel this, but like, this is how it is. And so instead of being like, I love you and I want the moon to fall in your mouth so I can suck it out with my hands, you know.
Okay.
So I just like taking
normal,
the idea.
Normal, Dan,
I like,
normal.
I like taking the idea of romanticism and making it less shameful and making it more just kind of like, these are just sort of biological.
Well,
things,
and the other thing is, and I did like this part about the episode because it made sense structurally and character-wise, is that up to this point, Trip himself has, he knows he has feelings for T'Pol, yet he has also avoided vocalizing those feelings or expressing those feelings to her. And there's a lot of good reasons for that, right? They're officers on the same ship, and she's a Vulcan and thinks humans smell gross, and all, there's all sorts of things, mm-hmm. right, that may make him, you know, because I don't think he's a shy guy, but, you know, he doesn't want to
like
mess this
Super
up.
Like Super Mario Brothers Part 2?
Yes, exactly. Like a shy guy.
Otherwise known as Doki Doki Panic?
I really like the idea that Sim is willing to do it, not because Sim has a different personality, but because Sim is facing his own death. He's basically saying, like, I'm about to die, so I am motivated to get over this whole, like, his whole, like, Trip's whole worry, I'm sure we can infer, is he doesn't want to potentially mess up their friendship. He doesn't want to make their professional relationship awkward. And in fact, that comes up later in the series. There is some stuff that happens with them that that does play out in a dramatic way, right? So if he admits his feelings to T'Pol, there he's taking on a lot of risk, and his cost benefit analysis, his emotional cost benefit analysis up to this point has been to not take the risk just yet, because he doesn't want to cause any issues.
But Sim
is able to do that, not because he's different, but because he's the same, but the context is different because he's about to die. Trip would do the same thing.
Of course, like he's got a time limit on the situation, and he doesn't have to pay for any consequences. But
it's just
the
like
idea,
when Sonic the Hedgehog is swimming underwater, and then you hear the music from because he can't hear the air, you know, the do 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 do.
But they still introduce the idea of him saying, "These are I don't know if these are my emotions or his emotions." So yes, he doesn't have to face the consequences of it, but at the same time, there still is that kind of strictly biological thing of like, I don't know why these feelings are happening, and I don't know if they're just implanted in me or what. So I thought that I just think that I like that it has both. Yes, of course, the time limit plays a factor. But anyways, I'm quick with you because time is a factor.
So pretty please with sugar on top. Clean the fucking car. Pulp Fiction, 1994.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it's a little bit of both, honestly. I think it's a little bit of both. I like so the whole opening part where the ship was all falling apart and stuff like that. We know through other episodes what their mission is, but we don't really know. And this is totally one of those things where maybe I'm wrong that we do know, but I couldn't figure out what problem they were having. And it doesn't matter because that's not the point. But I was curious. Was anyone able to figure out what problem they were specifically having, you know, like why? I mean, I understand they went into that big cloud.
That was later. That was a secondary problem. That was a piled on problem.
But there was some kind of like 4.9.
The initial problem was not a problem. The initial thing was this: an Enterprise is loaded with this stuff where it's a warp 5 ship, but it's still fairly limited. And they're still, you know, it's technically an NX ship. It's an experimental ship, right? And what they're talking about here, what Trip is all on about, is that when they're flying at warp 5, they can do it, but they got like warp field fluctuations and other problems and Rattlin and
were they just testing their shit?
Exactly. He was just trying to tweak. He was trying to make a tweak to make it so that they could, as T'Pol put it, sustain warp 5 cruising velocity for longer periods of time before, and with probably with less shaking about and fuss, right?
And this isn't a criticism at all, because it doesn't really matter. But I just, the way we're introduced to it is Tucker's like, we need 4.9 thingamabobs in order to do that, you know? And then they start pushing at 4.9, and then he's basically like, they're like, press the button. And he's like, press the button. And he hears the engine. He's like, oh, those sounds are great. And it's just kind of like, it's not made really clear. But once again, it's not a criticism because it doesn't matter. I like that at one point, shit catches on fire. And T'Pol's essentially sitting next to a campfire at one point.
Yeah.
It's like, I like how we know the consoles explode. But at one point, there's just a fire next to her going off. And she's like, Everything's always.
I will say for another odd and end, I was not a huge fan of the whole like zero forward momentum. I was like, what the fuck, man? This is space. You got physicists that can tell you what's up. And it was nonsensical because they were trying to create drama about this. Like, we can't get out of this cloud with these iron globules. Yeah, but you don't have to say zero forward momentum. You can just say like, you know what? Yeah. Not enough. The shuttles are not producing enough momentum to get us out of here. in enough time that we'll be able to, we'll still have life support and all that other stuff.
That's the trick about space is you can put a small amount of acceleration over enough time, you'll be going super duper amazo fast.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't like that. I thought that was a drop in the ball there.
There was the diet, it was those things.
Diet Dr. Pepper?
No, they had a
diet slice. Those slice? Things, do they still make that?
No, nobody. Probably those things that were sitting on their sticking to their ship had a diamagnetic field that has a dampening effect. Now this is sort of a bastardization of the dampers versus dampeners, but they didn't say it had a damping effect. It had a dampening effect, and this was an Enterprise time. I'm actually curious now. Did they say? I bet they said damp. I bet they didn't say dampers in the Enterprise. But
it's Enterprise time.
You think they said? I don't think they said sensors either.
No, I didn't hear no sensors.
T'Pol might say it sometimes.
That must mean
sometimes. Sometimes they associate, not always, but sometimes they associate it with a sort of a Spocky Vulcan-y way to say things.
I think there was a reference to another episode when Sim says, "Can you imagine a lousier way to spend your old age, cooped up in that thing, peeing in a bottle?" And then he's like, this is him referencing why he didn't run away to Archer. He's like, he was going to run away. He's like, can you imagine something worse than peeing in a bottle cooped up in that thing? And he goes, I can imagine a worse thing. And then Archer's like, what would that be? He's like, being stuck in there with Malcolm. Is that a reference to the episode Shuttle Pod 1?
Yeah.
Where that actually happened.
I didn't catch that. Good catch. And that's a great episode. We should have talked about that.
It's a bottle episode.
It is a bottle episode, but it's so well done. And
it is
Dominic,
good.
Dominic Keating and what's his name? They're so great. Connor Trinneer.
I love those episodes where they sort of slowly, descend into something.
Well, and in this episode, we didn't see a lot of a number of the characters. We barely saw Hoshi.
Or Malcolm.
We barely saw Malcolm. Did we see Mayweather at all? Maybe he was flying the ship. He was flying the ship. That's right. He was at the beginning, but really, they're just not involved in this.
No,
but
He was flying one of the shuttle pods too.
That's right. Yeah. He was also flying a shuttle pod. So they're there.
They mentioned his name once or twice.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I mean, I know that you can't show attention to all the characters, so it's not a big deal. But you miss them because they're all they all do a really good job when they're given the opportunity. This episode, it's got, like we discussed, it's got a lot of issues. Fair chunk of it, I think, is elevated by the particularly Connor Trinneer and Jolene Blaylock's acting, and they put a little extra oomph into the story that otherwise is a little confusing.
Yeah, like I said before, I really like Jolene Blaylock acting like a concerned Vulcan, because that seems like it'd be kind of hard to pull off, like looking all stressed out and worried while still having this. Yeah. Vulcan facade, I thought that was pretty good.
My last odd and end was about that weird flute during the murder Sim scene. It was a really odd flute.
Well, you're talking about a musical hit?
In the soundtrack. It was some weird, I'm not even sure what kind of flute it was. It was very, it was out of character. It didn't seem to match up with anything. I don't know if I'm missing something from earlier in the episode that somehow made it seem like a weird, non-standard flute would be appropriate at this particular juncture in the story. I don't know, but I felt compelled to mention it.
My last thing was basically when Sim Trip Baby, Archer, it seemed like Archer looked uncomfortable when Phlox brought up the idea of naming them. They didn't, was another thing they touched on, but you can't be sure if that's what they were going for or not, but they kind of looked around and Archer was just like, and he was like talking about naming them. I got the feeling like, yeah, it sucks to like name one of these things. The Orsic fern benefits from disgusting baby shit specifically.
Yeah, forget about that. Yeah,
using that as fertilizer. For some reason, it was baby shit that was going to get those Orsic ferns. So
a lot of sex jokes and a lot of baby shit jokes and old people shit and piss jokes in this fairly purient humor.
Old people pissing shit.
That's why we lost the war.
Yeah. Old people. Remember, he was talking about it in that we just mentioned it when Sim was saying he didn't want to get cooped up because he knew he was going to turn old.
Oh, right.
He was going to be old and withered and locked in a shuttlecraft, pissing.
Oh, yeah, peeing in bottles. You're right.
Said peeing in bottles, but implicit in that was like, well, you're going to have to shit too. I don't know where you're going to be shitting all over the place. I don't know. It's pretty gross.
You got to.
Man, Archer.
For a few days.
I just have to reiterate that Archer looked pretty fucking brutal when he was basically telling Sim Tripp, he's like, I'm going to kill you. You know, that was, like, that was really, I was like, it made me feel bad. I was like, oh no, Scott Bakula.
Yeah, it wasn't, there wasn't even an argument. It wasn't like a debate. It wasn't, and Archer has been in some really very good and interesting debates, like with Phlox and other people, T'Pol, you know, really, really quite intense moral debates. We've seen him wrestle in his mind, and he bounces his water polo ball against the wall of his quarters while he's
thinking, I'm going to bounce you around while I wrestle you.
Not here. He's like, oh yeah, no, there's no decision to be made. That we made that decision
I'm gonna get you.
A while ago. All right. I think that probably does it for us, right? Like I said, I stand by it. I think it's a worthwhile episode to watch. I don't think it's the greatest episode. Oh, yeah. I think it's got problems, but there's stuff in there that's worth seeing, and it also is relevant to other parts of Enterprise, and there's some good acting bits and stuff like that too. But I do think you can hold this up as one of those sort of examples of Enterprise, again, a series I very much like, I'm a huge fan of, but that has suffers from these little bouts of sort of like, you're almost there. You almost made it, but you added a little bit too much tits and ass and added too many plot stuff, and you could have streamlined this a little bit and made it a little classier and made it somewhat of a more interesting story. I don't know if
maybe
anybody
they
has...
should have made this. Maybe they should have made this a season-long arc.
Yeah. Dan's solution to just about everything. Although in this case, who knows? That might have been interesting. He didn't have to die in 2 weeks. They could have made it that he dies in like 6 months.
Maybe they just need more two-parters. Yeah, 6 months. There you go.
Well, and that's what
They did three four-parters with the whole Zindi.
Well, in season three, of which this episode is a part, they have the overall Zindi arc.
Of which this episode is a part. That's some hardcore grammar right there.
But it's correct. And
it's absolutely correct. It's correct. Yeah,
I appreciate
hardcore.
That. I appreciate that. Season four of Enterprise, they figured out how to do this whole like we'll do three episode arcs. And they are there's
that wasn't such good grammar.
There's Bartle do. There are some good ones and there's some like less successful arcs in that. But in season four, that was really working for them. These like kind of the compromise between instead of a season long arc, do these little shorter arcs. But anyway, it's what's done is done. I think the producers have, you know, the Star Trek was laid fallow for many, many years after Enterprise was canceled after season four. And the newer folks, the new shows are by no means perfect, but I think that they are operating under more sophisticated and more experienced writers' rooms and production offices and things like that. So
drumbeat opening. I can do anything.
Yes, with the extra drum beat. So that's it for this week. Next week, who knows? We'll talk about something Star Trek-y.
It's gonna have to be TNG.
It could be TNG, or we could pick a special topic of some sort.
Yeah, it could be a special topic.
Can we even talk about Iborg at this point?
No, we'll never.
We've already talked about it in every.
Never talk about Iborg. For the pluses and minuses of this episode, similitude was depressing. So I think it'd be fun to pick something a little bit more fun and goofy next week. But you can
something where they go on shore leave.
Yes. Well, there's the Enterprise episode where they do that.
But there's the TNG one where the TNG one where Wesley falls into that little tiny glass thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But that would be kind of weird to do that episode.
Well, it might be a good one too. So okay, we will. Figured out, and you can find out what we'll be discussing next week either by waiting until the episode releases and checking out the title, or if you want to be a little bit more proactive about it, just follow us on one of our many social media feeds, such as at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter or Instagram, or you can search for It's Got Star Trek on Facebook, and we're on YouTube, and you can go to the website www.itsgotstartrek.com.
Dub, dub, dub.
If you have any comments or questions,
I move that we change the W to just dub.
You can write in to feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Duh, duh, duh.
Let us know whether you like dubstep
there's
or
some,
not.
Like French, there's some French song where she keeps going.
It's like every French song.
We can, you can send us your thoughts about French music, of which I personally am a big fan. But
I happen to like, by the way.
Until next week, we hope you have a lovely intervening series of hours and days until you hear from us next.
It's called Tut 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 by Jillian Hills.
Well, there you go. That doesn't sound like a very French name.
Like very, no.
Are you sure that isn't a is that a British singer who's like fooling on the French
or American? Even.
You know what? Maybe I got the song wrong. What's? Oh yeah, today I learned a song where the lyrics are literally da 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 da.
Isn't that that Volkswagen commercial?
Yeah.
Da da da. Okay, Dan's going to be looking that up for a while, so I'm going to go ahead and sign us out.
We'll probably have to end it, yeah.
So until next week, we hope you have a good
one. I was probably wrong about the other, I don't know.
And we will talk to you then. All right, have a good one. Good night. Goodbye. Goodbye. We're saying all the things. Does anybody else want to say goodbye? Dan, you say goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye.
All right, good. Everyone say goodbye. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
You know, you made this sound a whole lot worse than it is.
Advanced neuropressure can place great demands on the body.
Well, I have to say, so far it's a piece of cake.
We haven't gotten to the more challenging postures.
Well, I'm always up for a challenge.